Good afternoon. Welcome to the July 8th, 2024 special meeting of Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Chair Creosol, will you lead us? So this is an informational meeting. We will save questions for the end. And we have a hard stop time of, I'm going to say 5:50 now, to get ready for the next committee meeting. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to our Director of Emergency Management, Everett Erickson. Director?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank everyone for attending. I'd like to thank the organizations from the different first responder agencies for being here as well. And I'd like to recognize our team, start off by recognizing our team from the Department of Emergency Services. The GOC project team is myself, Deputy Director Steve Peterson, as well as from DPW, Brendan Masterson, Dean Rylowitz, and Rob Parody. Planning, Dennis Doyle. Budget. And the grants would be Don Quisnell and Victoria Reed. Information Services, Alan Macaluso, from the Executive's Office, Deputy Executive Jamie Capuano. From our Urban Architects, Christopher Young, he's a project manager and lead architect. The Alfondre Group, Rick Alfondre. GPI, John Montaigne, engineering firm. Cerami and Associates is technology. The Palumbo Group, Luis Rodriguez is the principal, and Tom Chesser is the construction manager. And Nice Tech is Chris Carney, technology and engineering advisors. I would also be remiss if I did not mention the additional work that the rest of my department puts into this project, you know, reviewing, you know, different questions from the team as a whole and giving their feedback. So really what I want to start off with is, you know, why this project started and why now. So just a little quick history. Our current facility dates back to 1960. There's been some renovations that were done in the 1980s. And then E911 was implemented on July 11th, 1994, actually by the father of Chair Gina Hanzip, which puts this Thursday our 30-year anniversary of having E911 in Ulster County. Along with that, I think it's also important to note that we were the first county in the Hudson Valley to implement 911. Landlines came into Kingston, to our 911 center, and cellular went to New York State Police. And then in the early 2000s, cellular carriers started phasing the routing of the cellular carriers to the PSAP here in Kingston. And today, now over our call volume from cellular is 92% of our calls, which is over 64,000 calls per year. It's extremely important to note that without a functional PSAP, Emergency Operations Center, it doesn't matter how good our first responder agencies are. If our residents are unable to call 911, we cannot dispatch fire, police, EMS. All right. So that's extremely, extremely important. Some of the work that our dispatchers do, the emergency management, Division of Emergency Management does with an EOC activation is crucial to the response and the recovery of every situation that we handle here in Ulster County. So just a little bit about the importance of 911, and I'm going to kind of correlate when I talk about certain things to, you know, what we're trying to do with this facility. Emergency coordination. Our 911 centers use advanced computer-aided dispatch systems to manage incoming and coordinate responses. That system is a countywide system currently that we went to in 2017, the end of 2019, and it's a countywide system for fire, police, and EMS. The primary server is housed at the Law Enforcement Center, And we've had instances where we've been in situation because of the where it sits, it's gone down. Specifically, last summer, our server system went down, and we had no access to run cards that determine where apparatus, fire apparatus, EMS agencies, and law enforcement agencies need to respond to. We had to fall back to binders. I'm sorry, in 2024, that's not how we should be operating. Okay. Rapid response. The speed of response can be critical in many emergencies. For example, case of cardiac arrest, every minute without treatment decreases the chance of survival by 7 to 10%. 911 operators play a vital role in providing minimizing these response times by providing services over the phone. We experienced this a few months ago when we recognized one of our dispatchers. The legislature recognized one of our dispatchers for the life-saving measures to pass Legislator Al Bruno, who unfortunately has recently passed away, but saved his life over the phone by providing instructions, EMD instructions. That's one instance. Another instance recently was a six-year-old in the town of Ulster that was saved. Okay, and one of the dispatchers provided CPR instructions over the phone. A six-year-old child. So, you know, those are those rapid responses and the residents being able to call and get the assistance that they need. Information gathering. Dispatchers are trained to ask specific questions to assess situations accurately. This includes using standardized protocols in different types of emergencies, ensuring consistent and to thorough information gathering. All that information is gathered by the PSAP, the 911 center, and it's shared with the first responders that are responding. We're giving them up-to-date information, live information from the caller, so when they arrive on scene, they can take the appropriate actions needed. The interoperability of this information is crucial when it comes to these different agencies responding, mutual aid agencies responding. We're gathering it all. We're sharing it. Technology integration. Our 911 centers increasingly incorporate advanced technologies, such as we're looking at next-gen 911 in New York State now. Hopefully, we see that in the near future. But we need to be prepared for next-gen 911. It's going to come. We don't have an exact date from New York State yet, but it's coming, and the facility needs to be able to handle that. What is next-gen 911? It's receiving text messages, which we can receive we can receive text messages right now through a third party, but specifically images and video. Right? You look at some of the disasters that we've seen throughout the nation, and these callers are able to share video to the 911 center, and they're able to then provide that to the first responders, and we're able to assess the situation prior to even arriving. And in larger scale natural disasters, that's crucial when our resources are limited. GIS for precise location tracking, and integration with smart city systems for real-time information, which is all stuff that, you know, we're looking at and we're trying to prepare ourselves for. And one of the biggest things, which probably should have been one of my first bullets that I spoke about, is the stress management, the mental health, and the physical health of our dispatchers, of the employees that work in the 911 center and the emergency operations center. And they deal with some extremely stressful situations, suicide. They've listened to suicide over the phone. They listen to crimes against children, death, and so on. So when this critical call is taken, there needs to be a safe place for them to decompress, right? They need an area where they can go. We don't have that right now. And, you know, that mental health and physical health is something that we really took into consideration, just like we're taking into consideration the information, the technology that we need to have at our fingertips to provide the services to the residents. During COVID, the 911 center operation did not go to split personnel every other week. We did not have 6-foot social distancing. That was not, we were not capable to do that in our facility, okay? Currently, our facility has 8 seats in it, okay? And we staff 6 of those seats during the day and 5 on the overnights. So the world didn't stop because of, there was a pandemic across the world. We still had to answer the phones. We still had to dispatch fire, police, EMS to every single emergency. Continuity of operation. 911 centers are designed to operate 24/7, even during disasters, right? The world doesn't stop. Just because, you know, an individual is calling in the town of Lloyd doesn't mean nothing's going to happen in the town of Rosendale. Most likely, they're going to happen at the same exact time. That's how Murphy Law works, right? So, you know, the 911 center answers over 69,000 calls a year, okay? That's 190 calls a day in a 24-hour period that we're managing, okay? 10-digit lines. That does not include our 10-digit lines. Our 10-digit lines, another 56,000 calls a year that we're handling, okay? The fire incident call volume, so based off of those, you know, 69,000 calls, we're dispatching fire, police, and EMS. So fire incidents, we're looking at just under 23,000 calls. Police incidents, we're looking at just under 52,000 calls. EMS incidents, we're looking at just under 17,000 calls. A lot of calls happening all at the same time. We've all been doing this with minimum staffing. Back in 2022, we did an in-house study based off of APCO standards. APCO and NENA are the standards that we use to determine how we're going to operate. And based off of the call volume, it says that we need 11 dispatchers per shift. Now, we understood that we can't hire 11 dispatch. We cannot fix that gap immediately. We understood that we don't have the room for all those dispatchers right now. And within the strategic plan in 2022, moving forward, we said we're going to hire a few dispatchers every single year. We're now maxed out. We're moving towards 10 within the new facility on days and 8 in the evenings on the overnights. So a lot of these same important bullets that I spoke about, emergency coordination, rapid response, information gathering, technology integration, health and mental health, continuity of operation, are directly correlated to the EOC as well. And that's why it's extremely important that the PSAP and the EOC are right next to each other. And reason being is a lot of this information sharing when it comes to emergency coordination, the EOC, those individuals in there need to know what's going on. They need to know what units are responding. They need to know what information is being gathered so they can plan appropriately. All the technology that we now have within our PSAP would get shared to the EOC. So now they have eyes on the incident. They know what's occurring. We need to address health and mental health of those operating within the Emergency Operations Center as well. And we need to ensure that we have continuity of operation. Okay. Just to take a few steps back, I guess, to just touch on continuity of operations a little bit more. It was, I believe, 4 years ago now, a truck cut the fiber line at the entrance to Golden Hill Lane. CAD went down for 12 hours because of that. The lack of redundancy and diversity into the facility is crucial. It is a crucial issue that would be addressed with this new facility, making sure that we can continue to operate. We looked at power outages and the Golden Hills at Golden Hill where we currently are. Over the past 7 years, there was 16 outages in our zone of protection, where we're provided power from Boulevard, that switchyard. And each outage ranged from 1 to 20 plus hours. Okay. Yes, we have a generator, but that does not address the resiliency of the center itself. Just want to go over some EOC activations, because, you know, we talk about the use of the EOC and, you know, how often it's going to be used. We have three levels of EOC activation, and the first level, level three, which is it's an enhanced monitoring level. Basically what happens is a required heightened state of awareness. The EOC is staffed by my department and minimal county staff. Okay, that happens a lot, and those activations just aren't put out there publicly where Ulster County has their EOC active. Pretty much every storm, we're monitoring it. Very often, Deputy Director Mike Madison comes up to my office, and we're monitoring from there. That's not a really a place, my office is not really set up to monitor storms. Okay, but we make it work because the public demands that we make it work. EOC activation level two, partial activation. Threat identified with some resources directed towards intelligence gathering and operational considerations. The EOC manager will determine the operational times and necessary staff. Okay, that happens often as well. I'll kind of go over those types of activation. EOC activation level one is a full activation, which requires a 24-hour operational period where we bring a lot of our partners from the outside. EOC activations that we use that will trigger an activation, incidents that will trigger an activation, terrorist attacks or threats, large-scale accidents such as major transportation accidents, train derailment, plane crashes. We've had a plane crash in Ulster County, numerous actually. Train derailments, there's 38 miles of CSX rail, okay, that does transport through Ulster County. Could that happen here? These are all things that could easily happen here. Public health emergencies, pandemics, disease outbreaks, we've seen the pandemic. Mass gathering, large events like major sports competitions, conventions, festivals, we have them here. We have them here often. We activated the Emergency Operations Center for SUNY New Paltz graduation, which was a 5,000 people in attendance, as well as the same time SUNY Ulster was having their graduation. Critical infrastructure failures. We saw that with Winter Storm Landon. Cyber incidents affecting critical systems. We see them happening more and more. Civil unrest, search and rescue operations. We do search and rescue operations all year, all the time. We have gorgeous parks, and we see a lot of those search and rescue operations. Some of them go on for a few days, and we would activate the EOC. Planned events with potential for disruption. Environmental incidents. Mass migration refugee situations. We saw that coming out of New York City. You know, that was a possibility that we would have to activate to find safe refuge for those coming up here to Ulster County. And multi-jurisdictional law enforcement operations. We do that quite a bit as well. So really, we have those are the functions of our department. And just to kind of bring that full circle to the limitations and gaps, the current facility that we are in is a ranch-style brick home from 1960s. And it's largely inadequate for today's operational requirements of a 911 center and of an emergency operations center. The staffing numbers, there's eight positions. There's 16 positions in our EOC. We've identified numerous power outages that have occurred over the past 7 years. We talked about the fiber line being cut and being without without our CAD for 12 hours. Limited access in and out of the facility. There's one way in, one way out, and limited redundancy and diversity to ensure resiliency so we can dispatch fire, police, EMS, handle large-scale incidents for the residents of this county. And now I'm going to turn it over to Christopher Young to talk about the new facility.
Yeah, if I may. If I just sort of signal you, can you just?
Sure.
Thank you, Everett. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, go ahead and go to that second slide. That was a slide for the existing facility that Everett was speaking of there. I want to thank the legislature for having us back, inviting us back here to talk. Much appreciated. Wanted to kind of give greetings both to a few familiar faces and also if there are some newer faces. I realize that maybe about a third of you are new. So I wanted to take a moment and to kind of give a bit of an overview for where we were and kind of what we've been working on for the new facility, kind of familiarize everyone with what's going on, and then from there kind of an update for sort of status of the project. So starting almost about 3 years ago, we were looking at sites. We ended up looking at 9 sites in and around Kingston and another 4 or more down around New Paltz to figure out, you know, what place might be best. Go ahead. And ended up finding a site in New Paltz, very close to the thruway, just east of that, near Route 299. One of its sort of high recommendations was the real estate adage, location, location, location. So first location being the fact that it's got the terrific access to highways. So, you know, personnel coming in and out for regular 24/7 operations, or for that matter, if there's an activation, kind of easy access for all the folks who need to get there. Keep in mind that, you know, this is not where it's not as if any emergency vehicles are getting out of there, but still there's still a great need for kind of coming and going. So that was first location, great location. Second great location, Verizon trunk lines, fiber optic cables. You know, just exactly as we've got the highways and the roads going there, we've got terrific opportunity here for the infrastructure for communications, which after all, I mean, second to the actual people is the lifeblood really of a 911 call center. And then third, utilities. We're close enough that we'll be able to get pulled in with the municipal water system, which is great for resiliency, and then also for Central Hudson and electricity. In fact, very top right corner of that image is where they've got a substation, which, you know, having checked with them, we know is a lot more reliable, frankly, than what Golden Hill has at the moment from that one. Go ahead, next slide. We were talking about 50. Sorry, we did some quick readjusting and some things didn't quite make it. We're talking about 57 acres or so here, and there was an image that kind of looks like a kite that got shifted. We don't need the entire proportion, the entire lot, so that does then give the county an opportunity to make use of, you know, the sort of surplus land. We need a good sort of solid 7 or so acres for our purposes. But otherwise, you know, there's opportunity, let's say, for, you know, large solar farm, not part of our project, but certainly the opportunity is there for the county to make use of. Go ahead and maybe next slide. So sort of a quick site plan under development. You know, this is that top, the sort of northwest quadrant there with gray for the building footprint, parking area, access off of Paradise Lane. There's a bit of grading that GPI is working on, but otherwise, you know, we're working with a relatively flat piece of land, which is kind of to our advantage for building. Has some vegetation, but mostly kind of a you know, brush and the like, so kind of easy to work with in that respect. And it's We have, just in the same way, we've got access off of Paradise Lane, kind of off of this, there is access as well from South Ohioville Road. So again, we're always looking for those kind of points of redundancy. Go ahead, next slide. Thanks. This was an earlier image, which is still kind of close enough to what the plans all call for, back from our schematic design days, including our solar panels. A future solar farm, again, that might be a separate item, but we are making plans for solar panels on the rooftop, all kind of part of both, a green outlook, but also a resilient outlook too, frankly. There are there's sort of a number of features like that to kind of give us both that benefit. I was going to sort of tap Rick for talking to some of those features in terms of. Sure. Yeah, we can come back. Absolutely. Yep. Next slide. Sorry, one back, I think. Hoping to pull up a floor plan that focuses on, there are kind of five major areas. Sorry, can you go one back further? Five major areas that are components of this. One is, all right, that's all right. Clearly one is the PSAP itself, right? I mean, that's kind of the real starting point of this whole project, needing an updated facility. The second one is then the EOC to work hand in hand, kind of that direct connection that Everett was talking about. A third item is, if you can't go back, are you able to go forward? Okay. Third one is an IT portion. So we're looking to, I can point at least for the people. Oh, there we go. Terrific. Yay. Thank you. Right. So PSAP, we're seeing that in the green shaded area. Again, kind of the initial point. In red next to that, that's our EOC area. There's a number of spots that we've highlighted in yellow, which are essentially common to both, right? Conference rooms, lunch room, break room. So red was the EOC. Purple is the IT portion. Essentially, let's call it about half of that or a third of that, even more than, is dedicated just to the equipment that the PSAP needs itself. Another, let's say maybe 40% is for the county. The whole idea, in fact, of this is now, look, as long as we're going to make a place that's got the resiliency and the protections that's good enough for the 911 call center, might as well use that same facility for Allen's equipment for the county servers. So it's got those two, and then down lower end is the AV equipment as well. So it's kind of three part there for IT. And then as well, bringing in a GIS portion toward the top. Switching over toward the left in the blue, these are Department of Emergency Services office spaces, record room offices, the quiet room for decompressing that Everett also spoke to. And then off down below and to the right in gray, these are our mechanical spaces. And don't mean to downplay them with gray. This whole system wouldn't work without kind of the air conditioning, with the electric systems, plumbing, everything in there. So key for sure. Let's go ahead and if you can go forward again. Maybe actually go ahead and skip to the next one. So the idea is here, we're just kind of giving a bit of a floor plan where we kind of took away this one's gone wonky. Let's go to the next. As if we sort of chopped off the roof so we can see inside. And a couple of views now here, renderings from the PSAP. Keep in mind, a lot of what's going into here is not just the building and the resiliency there. It's quite a bit of equipment for those consoles, for the dispatchers, both at the actual consoles themselves, up on the walls. Notice the windows sort of the backside. This is giving that kind of critical view between PSAP and EOC. Go ahead, next one. This is also same area. It's from the supervisor area, looking down a little bit, and again looking with a view toward the EOC side. Let's go ahead and one more. Sorry, let's Yeah, the image is not showing, sorry. Now we're on the EOC side, and it's looking a little funny there. Not sure what's going on the right, forgive the technical difficulties, but it's as if you just walked into the EOC, conference room is to the back. You can see off to the left, again, the view to the PSAP, and even though the graphics are obstructing it, over to the right, kind of a whole video wall. Mind you, this, so toward the back is where there's a set of three kind of command centers for the, you know, the critical folks running the EOC, and then all the other stations are for the other county personnel, agency personnel, all coming together for either for the kind of pre-activations or certainly for the activations themselves. Let's go ahead. Same view to the EOC, looking backward toward the entrance, and then with the view to the PSAP to the right. Let's keep going. And again, sorry, the graphics are gone. We're not seeing the IT portion. That's, yeah, sorry. Yeah, that's fine. I think we can sort of go toward the last slide. Just check how we're doing time. Okay. Please go. Let's go for it. Do you want to speak up, or do you want to? Oh, yeah.
Can you hear me? Yes. So building resiliency, energy efficiency, climate resiliency, and security concerns are all coupled together. One of the things about the site plan, which is important to note, that there's at least an 82-foot distance separation between the building and any vehicles. Otherwise, if it was closer, the building would have to be blast resistant. It is going to be ballistics resistant by virtue of the wall assembly, which is insulated concrete form wall system, which is a reinforced concrete wall with insulation inside and out. You may have seen it. The Village of New Paltz fire station was constructed that way. It's super energy efficient, it's ballistics resistant, earthquake, wind resistant. The roof system is steel frame with a lot of insulation, properly air sealed. The mechanics are going to be what's commonly called geothermal or ground source heat pump, heating and cooling, with energy recovery ventilation. The great thing about geothermal is that all of the equipment is either in the building or in the ground, so you don't have to worry about ballistics, and it's also the most energy efficient form of heating and cooling. It is electrically driven, so to be clear, this building is going to use a lot of energy, more on the equipment that's in the building than the building enclosure itself, which is going to hardly going to need any heating. It's mostly going to need cooling because of the amount of equipment that's in the building. So we are planning, I think it's about 100 kW solar on the roof, which will also charge the battery backup system. There's a large UPS system in the building. There is going to be a very large generator as backup, which will be in a ballistics enclosure. One of the things I wanted to point out about the electric, we did multiple studies on various sites. The Golden Hill site, besides the other trouble with it, is in what's called, Central Hudson calls their third zone of protection, and has had all of those outages. The Ohioville site, this site is in the first zone of protection and had like two outages
for a couple of minutes.
Sixteen minutes. Right. So in terms of outages, it's extremely unlikely, even with the ice storm that happened. So couple all of those together, we're going to have a very resilient, safe, energy efficient and durable and long lasting building and property. I think there's more to say to that, but I think that's enough.
And I just wanted to add on a little bit about the IT infrastructure. I know Alan is here, so Alan, jump in when I get something wrong. So currently our IT infrastructure is housed over on North Manor Road, South Manor. I knew I was going to do the wrong one. South Manor Road. And it's in a building that's located right next to the train tracks. So this building, we've had roof alarms on it in the past for snow removal. It's in a building that really your IT infrastructure should not be housed in. So moving the IT infrastructure into this facility really makes a lot of sense. Frankly, as we look at our servers, as we look at the capacity of the county operation, having it in this centralized location really is going to improve both our operations, also the operations for all of the county, the 911 system, the emergency operations system. Having all of that centralized together really just makes a lot of sense. And frankly, having it there is going to reduce our number of outages and our number of critical incidents. We had an incident where we had to call people in over the weekend because our server room was getting too hot. Those types of things keep happening, and they're happening more regularly at this point. So the more we can move to that secure infrastructure, and we look at it both from, emergency management, obviously sheriff operations, but we also need to look at it now from that tech operation as well, because it is so critical. Anything else, Alan? All right. That's it.
Thanks. Great. So then let's take a look kind of where are we now. We design team had gotten to a point where we had reached 90%, or we call 90% CDs, construction documents, so another 10% to go. Keep in mind, I think of it not necessarily as a straight line, so it's more of kind of a curve where that last 10% can take a good bit more kind of effort and concentration than that, in the preceding ones. For getting through that last 10%, a couple kind of key items. One, we're looking to go through a value engineering exercise. What's value engineering? Value engineering, I think sort of cynically, that can be like, hey, what do we not need? Can we just sort of throw out? Mind you, I think when we've been going through our designs here, we've been doing, a fairly conscientious effort to not have much in the way of, bells or whistles or waste space. But still, we're taking a hard look with the county and the Department of Emergency Services to figure, like, what can we forego, or what at least maybe can we forego for the first day, day one, So that's value engineering. Value engineering, just, a few more discussions and sit-downs with the county to get a couple decisions made. Design team still has to put in a fair amount in terms of just finishing off details and drawings and specifications. And getting approvals, life safety department approvals, and DEC. DEC, in fact, has kind of been one of the kind of the main item that's somewhat dragged out the whole process. There have been a number of discussions, calls, meetings with DEC to figure what needs to be done. The property, as you may all perhaps all know, I don't know, was already part of a voluntary brownfield cleanup program, and the county, when it was looking to acquire the property, joined in on that program. But it's been a little bit, maybe a moving target in terms of what the DEC is going to require the county. And John, if I can ever tap you to.
So rather than stand up, I'll just talk from here. as you can imagine, a large field like this that was in agriculture and actually in apple orchard agriculture, it has, just like everything else in Ulster County that's in that same kind of agricultural use, has historic pesticide use. And that's the primary issue on the site, is some pesticide residual product. Pesticides in general don't transport well from rain. They tend to sit in the topsoil lens. So we have a site that the area where we're looking at the new facility is a part of the site that has some contamination on it, but has probably the lowest out of the entire 57 acres on it. There is one other area on the site that has a contamination from a pesticide called dieldrin. And dieldrin is one that is more likely to transport. So the DEC is amenable to us doing what we need to do for the about 7-acre area that we are building on. But they're also going to require that we do some remediation it's about a half to three-quarter acre area where some of the dieldrin is. And that removal and cleanup will probably require some of this material to be brought off site. There is another consultancy, TML Associates, that has been doing all of the coordination on this. They will be doing testing as we go along during construction. A lot of this is during construction. For the area where the PSAP and the EOC will be, that soil contamination is in the top 6 inches of the soil. And the way that you remediate that is you actually just strip that material and you stockpile it, or you use it in berms, and then you put a protective topsoil lens over it and you plant it. So we'll be able to remediate that right on the site. We've integrated berms into the protection for the building. So if you remember the rendering, there were some areas that showed berming on the sides of the building and some low walls in the front that also have berming in it. And that's where we're going to spoil that material and take that care of that for the remediation. So that's, you know, that's really about it. It's not that complicated for this site, and for the value of this property, it's well worth the investment on the county's part.
So, yeah, thank you, Sean. So we're looking to get a set of responses back to the DEC essentially kind of any day or week now. There will then be a 45-day public comment period. And then kind of once we get that, fingers crossed, you know, then we can really, as far as they would be concerned, we could sort of start construction at any moment. In the meantime, you know, as I say, we're working hard to have it where we can have it ready to go out to bid in September. With Palumbo Group as well, so get that all packaged and ready to go in September. We're essentially trying to still get to bid openings in October so that this could come back before a recommendation could come back to the legislature in November, on the idea of then kind of kicking off late November, giving a notice to award in late November, and then starting construction, let's say early next year, early 2025, and then that means Everett and Company can move in, let's say, in January of 2027. It's, you know, something on the order of maybe 15 months for construction, but then that next 9 extra months or so are for fitting it out, getting all the equipment in, testing it all, and commissioning, and so on. So still ways to go, and kind of all the more urgency to get this finished. I know both for DES and actually I realized for IT as well, you know, they're working with systems that are kind of end of life. So there's kind of a bit of holding breath sort of every day perhaps on that account. So that, and also we realize this it's a big project, and you know, any delay with thanks to DEC or whatever does also then bring in a whole issue of escalation of costs. You know, if we're looking at something like a 4.6 or 7% escalation per year for our building and our site work, that amounts to $1 million a year. And we want to put the $1 million into, you know, the equipment and the building itself rather than into inflation, as it were. So I think that kind of covers it for me, unless there are questions.
So the facility itself, within the PSAP, there's expansion of 4 positions, and also to the west of the facility, there was forward thought process thinking to be able to expand by another 5,000 square foot on the western portion of the building. So we do have that immediate expansion within the PSAP, and then forward, you know, being able to expand by 5,000 square foot. I also think that you need to take into consideration the type of building we're building now, the type of construction, where this is literally we are in a brick home that was built in 1960s. The brick is falling apart. You know, this is not a 911 center EOC operational facility. Rick, I think what you said, 50 plus, what was it? Yeah.
20-25 years dealing with mechanics, but the concrete's going to be there for long after we're gone, it'll be there. So it's at least a 100-year building, if not more.
It's a poor concrete structure.
Yeah.
And then same for the roof, for example, using a stainless steel metal roof. You know, we're trying to go for items that are not going to you know, have you looking in 20, 30 years to
avoid deferred maintenance, basically.
What about size and growth? I think that's going to be a big growth in the way that having to build AI and
And again, I'm going to let Alan follow up on this one. You know, again, it's an issue where, you know, we've accounted for space where there's just sort of sitting empty rack space so that we can add more racks. Both, you know, they're not the racks that are accounted for are not necessarily themselves at kind of a full 100% capacity. So there's a bit of wiggle room that way and a little bit of wiggle room in the other way. And then if I get it, I think certainly we've talked about this as well. There's the whole question, like, how much to have there versus how much to have in the cloud.
Correct. I mean, there's a couple of things at play here. So as IT and server equipment and networking equipment develops, they get smaller. They get more powerful. So the rack sizes are actually shrinking. And that coupled with the sort of push towards cloud computing, where you're using sort of like, say, Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure, those types of platforms where those devices are managed by a third party, then that equipment's not on premise. So you're not having to outfit rack space, UPSs, power redundancy, et cetera, because some of that workload is out in the cloud. So some of it's also a strategic consideration on how much should be on premise, what should be kept close to home, what could be put out in the cloud. And we're putting more and more stuff out in the cloud as we vet them and kick the tires on them. So I think the consideration about whether or not IT equipment space will grow, I think it's actually going to go opposite. It's going to shrink over time as we put more stuff, workloads in the cloud.
I have a question for you, Alan.
Most of the building will have a raised floor, the IT, EOC, and PSAP. So, if you know, communications cabling can change in the future.
Future changes to setups are easily done.
I'm not sure who has an answer, but I'm wondering if we have estimates on the latest in gel cooling for the drives. Right now, big drives are being cooled by a gel. Do you know about this? Some of the more high-powered AI technologies are using gels to cool everything, and so I'm wondering if we're using state-of-the-art cooling systems besides
the racks
geothermal.
Themselves?
Gels, or is it phase change material?
I'm not sure. I just learned about it, but I'll share that with you.
Please.
Also, I'm wondering, you mentioned ballistics proof versus what was the other term?
Blast proof.
How? And so the ballistics proof would prevent what?
Bullets.
Okay.
Instead of, you know, exploding vehicles.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And this is going off of the sort of standard guidelines. Everett had mentioned Nina, you know, sets out guidelines. So it's either a ballistic level 4 that they call for. So in theory, hey, we could go to, you know, 8 or 10, I think it goes up to. So, but clearly, like, we're trying to meet the standards, the kind of requirements.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And the glass is also taken into account?
Correct.
Thank you.
Level 4 is the minimum, and all the glass meets that minimum requirement.
And there's not much of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you notice on the design, we didn't have as much glass for one of those reasons.
But there's enough for mental health purposes for everybody? It's good.
On the rendering, you see the glass is up high.
That was nice.
Natural lighting, but it's not for the
compared to what we have now. A lot of natural lighting was taken into consideration for those specific reasons. So yeah, the EOC, the PSAP is pretty much locked down to the 911 center operation 24/7, 365. The EOC, a little different. You know, that could be used at the request of any department to come in and use it for whether it be meeting, whether it be getting together to discuss operations, you know, something that may be happening in another place in the county. You know, DPW needs to sit down and needs the think tank, you know, can be used for multiple different things. to give you a, you know, how many days out of the year it's going to operate, I don't know. I mean, during COVID, we operated, Steve, how many days we operated during COVID? It was over a year that the EOC, and we worked out of an EOC for over a year during COVID, right? So I don't know. It depends on storms. One of the things I didn't point out when I spoke before is Ulster County is first along with Delaware County when it comes to federally declared disasters. It's not something to be proud of, you know. We'd be first in, but we're first at 25, you know, to in all New York State. So, like I said, I talked about the different times we would operate, you know what I'm saying? And I believe based off of how we're looking to move forward the operation, you'll see the EOC activated at the three different levels a lot more often than you do right now because of the separation. The current EOC is at the Sheriff's Office, and it's not next to 911 Center. And that synergy of technology and working together, it's very, very hard to make happen when we're in two separate locations. Absolutely.
Yeah, and just one thing to add to that, in working with Everett, we have designated primary and secondary from most departments in terms of if we do activate an EOC, who will be from the county departments to be located at that EOC. We will be doing required training for all those individuals. So this gives us an opportunity to have dedicated space to do those operative trainings and to do those tabletop exercises that right now are really difficult to put together and to organize for the county as well. So it gives us those additional opportunities.
So, thank you. They actually had an idea, but they've changed people. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's important to. That's a very important question. We have had outreach in terms of public meetings down there held by the town of New Paltz. We also have approval from the town of New Paltz relative to something called the balance of public interest tests. So we have an immunity from their zoning statute relative to that. We would anticipate as we move closer to construction, we do another round of outreach. One of the other questions that didn't get asked that's important from the legislature is that the legislative policy is that if certain things are over a certain cost, that there needs to be a study for a PLA, project labor agreement. We have completed that work with respect to the project labor agreement study. The legislature endorsed that study. We're currently in negotiations. I'd say we're 90% there. It's being reviewed at several different levels. So we will have a PLA for this project.
I just wanted to underscore the three points you made about location. In the original decision to go to this site, we did have a matrix, but my understanding of how to use those matrices is that there should be an iterative process. And once you start to have the notion that you can have access, road access of this type and have fiber communications and have water utilities and energy utilities and redundancy. I don't think redundancy was even on the original matrix. And so you don't want to do too much after the fact looking and changing what you originally thought was going to be useful to you. But seeing this presentation and seeing us going from a 20th century facility to a 21st century facility, and one that I think will, you know, easily go 60, maybe even 100 years, with the ability to, you know, a new factor coming in, you know, to my mind as I watch this presentation is, you know, how easily can this facility adapt to what we may encounter in the next decade or several decades. It just seems to have a robustness to it that I think is, you know, but certainly has been a factor in my enthusiasm for the site from the time that those features started to be brought forward, and especially here now as we see it coming into that detail it looks like it's holding up as going to be able to, you know, serve us in those ways. So I appreciate all the work that we see. I mean,
and on that
got a great team here.
If I can add to that, one thing when we were working on those matrices that I don't think I fully appreciated was an advantage. I mean, this advantage could have been anywhere else, but clearly, you know, a lot of it was looking Paradise Lane, Golden Hill, kind of two main contenders. Golden Hill, you know, even if it's not up to snuff for the 911 center for 2024, it will actually continue to serve a vital function. It will become the backup location for the 911 call center. There is currently, I believe, is it the State Barracks, like Highland?
Yeah.
With like two seats, maybe?
Yeah, currently our backup center is SP Highland. We are required to have a backup center. It's currently SP Highland with two seats. You know, we talk about how we can't, you know, we have issues with the size today. And now if we went down, going to two seats would be extremely problematic. It's important that it's on completely different, you know, trunk lines. It's on different switch yards. It's completely separate on different sides of the county, right? So, you know, that facility will serve as a backup.
And then somewhat relatedly, you know, the county is in sort of talks and making efforts with Dutchess County, where they would sort of have a bit of a symbiotic relationship, so that, you know, longer term plan is that either one could serve as a backup to the other.
Correct.
You know, so you know, you might think, like, wait a moment, if you got eight seats, you know, why these extra seats? Well, just imagine where Dutchess County suddenly goes down, and you're the backup for them, as well as Ulster County. So
yeah, future plans is for a regional backup center. So all the counties would be able to, you know, go there. And, you know, we're working towards that in our new phone system. We're in the same phone system. We're in the same CAD system, right? So, you know, we could walk into their center. They could walk into our center as a backup.
Speaking of redundancy, one, I saw there was 20 seats in the drawings, and your goal is to have 10 people working. So is that backup?
There's 20 seats. Four of them are for future expansion, so it's 16. Three of those are training seats, so that's where, but they could be used as actual 911 seats. So the goal is to have 10 dispatchers on duty, but we would staff up for storms, right? So we get a large storm, call volume is going to increase, the amount we're going to be dispatching is going to increase. We want to be able to staff up and have the appropriate people. So we don't want to go in there and just build out 8 seats, because we're going to be in the same situation that we are today.
Right.
You know?
Another redundancy that came up was the Ohioville entrance. You said that is existing. Is it existing now, or it's in the plans?
So the land, the property itself does extend down to South Ohioville Road. That was one of the earlier efforts we were making to try and make sure that, you know, original construction costs don't get out of hand. So we'll be making use of that whole access so we can bring in utilities, bring in fiber cable, bring in electric, bring Verizon. But we won't, you know, it will kind of maybe serve as a bit of a utility road. It's not going to get paved. It's not going to sort of have a gate access, not initially. But presumably, when money allows, and I would imagine that would be a terrific addition. Enhancement.
Last question, if you don't mind. I was wondering if, because we have to remediate soil and cover it, is it possible to use mycological remediation, because it's, I think, cutting edge to use mushrooms to try and remediate?
So this pesticides are more of a heavy metal, so they're not absorbed like you would if you had oil contamination or other products like that that are petroleum-based. So unfortunately, that wouldn't be an option on this.
Okay, thank you.
With reference to time, we have about maybe for one more question, and then we're going to need to wrap it up.
Yes.
From the street essentially down and then buried. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much to everyone for attending and for your questions and the presentation. Thank you to all of our emergency management and first responders. May I get a motion to adjourn?
Make the motion.
Legislator Hewitt, and a second. Legislator McCullen. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.